Now, as I say, this group is unique in the sense that you're all plugged in already, you know? I mean, you're with the Knights of Columbus, you're cooking fish, you're working in the office. Lindsay, we need to get plugged in, but we'll get her plugged in somehow. I don't know if Nicole or... Where's Diane today? I'm surprised I didn't see her at Mass yet so far.
Yeah,
she wasn't
at Mass last night.
She wasn't last night, and nor was she at the 7:30, so I don't know what... I hope she's not sick, but... Because we have a project for her. So Lindsay will be here Holy Thursday. She'll get her foot washed along with... I still don't know what's going on with Nicole, but... and then Amanda, as far as I know, is gone. But other than them, I gave your names to the office. So Paul, Donna, Lindsay, I said I hadn't talked to you yet, but I said I'm going to talk to you. Laura, your name is there. And who else?
Robert,
there. God bless Diane. You know, she freaked out about having her foot washed. You know, she has something... She has a foot condition, a medical condition. She says, believe me, you don't want to do this. Okay, we're not going to make anybody do. But one of the things that has to get done, too, is on Holy Saturday, remember I said we start with an empty church, you know, it's stark, and the altar is naked, so to speak, so the altar has to get dressed. Traditionally, we've chosen two people from RCIA to come and dress the altar. So I figured, well, Diane could do that. You know, she can come and along with somebody else. And I thought Robert would be another. I mean, you got to pick somebody, you know. And I thought, well, Robert might be good. He and Diane can go and dress, put the altar cloth on the altar. And Rita will make sure she's there supervising so it's done impeccably. God help them if it's 1/16th of an inch off in either direction. And so, what I want to talk about today are just kind of reminders. And one of the fun, let me get rid of putting in my hands here. I have a couple of things. I don't care how you want to distribute this. Ignatius Press, I told you they're good, right? Excellent. You can trust everything. You know, there's a lot of kooky Catholic publishers out there. You got to watch. You know, they'll get a lot of people that write sensationalist stuff, and Ignatius Press is rock solid. I think I gave you one of these last week, Sophia Institute Press. Somebody, maybe Diane took it or something. Rock solid. I get these in the mail and I bring them in. If you're in, I have another Autumn catalog. I know somebody took the last few I brought in. Here's another. If you buy something from them, you're going to get a lot of these. Your mailbox is going to get full. If you're looking for gifts, this place is good. The Catholic Company, if you want to get somebody a rosary. Look at that picture on the front summarizes what this company is about. I mean, sweetness and a little girl making her first communion sort of thing, praying, you know, with the nice rainbow-colored rosary look, for example, you know, you can have prayer bears, you know. I purchase gifts from this place. Catholic Child, if you know anybody with a Catholic Child, or, you know, the nice stuff, and the prices are pretty good. And also, I get these all the time as well. If you like icons, a lot of people, we don't have any icons in here, do we? No. If you like the icon style of art, you know, the icon style of art is that kind of stuff, you know? This is a dropship company, of course. This time of the year, they're going to be selling their Easter eggs, their Russian eggs, you know. The fancy ones with Mary and the baby Jesus on the back, you know? So, however you want to, and these two, I get this stuff out, split these up however you want, take turns, I don't know, pass them around, they're free for the taking.
Nobody sends you a Jeep, do they?
I wish they did. And I'll continue, if stuff comes in, I'll continue to bring in catalogs, and maybe we'll arrange for a place where I could leave things for you. So please feel free to take, and I'll keep on bringing. So tell me about the mission. What was your reaction to the mission?
So the first one was very good. It was a good confession.
Good.
Taylor was right next to us that day.
And that's something?
Yeah, he was, I think he said 30 years he hasn't done one.
And he went to confession and then he was killed on Tuesday.
Yes, mm-hmm. He had a confession.
That's, their family was there last night and I mentioned that. I said, just all you can say is praise God, you know? I mean, I told the family that's the greatest gift you could have ever gotten. You know, the guy went to confession and died. I mean, we hope we're that fortunate that God gives us that grace to be able to go to confession.
This would be a great week to die.
We can plan for it.
Yeah.
get Baker acted here.
Yeah.
You know?
The first class was good. It was about heaven, hell, judgment.
Yes, okay. Yes.
And we saw the second line of confession, and then after that, like a big storm up there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I was there Sunday, Monday, and Wednesday. Tuesday, I had to go pick Carol up from the airport. She got back from seeing her mother, who's not doing so well. And then on Thursday, I had to work. There was an awards banquet on campus that I had to attend. So that's where she is. We were wondering where you were. We haven't seen you. You can hand those out, and I'll get hand the floor to you in a minute. Diane, we have a job for you after all at the Easter Vigil.
I have someone
coming. That's okay. They can sit there and watch you. You're gonna, with Robert, you're going to dress the altar.
Okay.
The altar's going to be bare at the appropriate time. Rita is going to, Rita Stefanovic, she'll get you. We're going to go over this at the practice. That's why we're having the practice.
Okay.
And you'll practice dressing. So you and Robert... we'll bring up the altar cloth and dress the altar.
Okay. How would you show me what to do?
She'll show you exactly what to do.
I've got three more, so did two go here?
One.
You could have you get two.
You get two, yes. One here if you want. You both
okay. Yes. Hey, Nicole is even with us today.
Oh boy!
Hi, what's up? Hi. What are you doing? Thank you. I tried, but
there's one left now.
So yeah, well, that's Amanda who seems to be missing in action.
Okay.
Well, right off, don't you?
It's you.
Okay.
All right. Tell us all about the Angels of Mercy. Tell us about the shawls. Tell us about everything.
Okay. Here's our volunteer registration form. If you don't mind.
Go for it.
Just sign their name and
it's for you to phone
number if you lost it. And
how's that for assertive? Here's our volunteer registration. Put your name and phone number. Anyway, even today, as I'm, if you went to church yet, as you're reading that gospel, right? And of course, the chief priest Judas threw the money back in the temple, and they said, "Well, we can't put it in the treasury; it's blood money." But notice, they found a way to use it. And I said, I kept saying to myself, "Pastors haven't changed one bit in 2,000 years. They will find a way to use the money, regardless."
I went ahead and paid this prayer. I thought I was being really careful. Yes. And really organized and just thinking of everything beforehand. Well, it kind of backfired because it's not working like it's supposed to.
And just get a little cut there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's okay. Yeah, that's okay.
I can barely.
I believe you. I understand.
Okay. So what we did is we used to put these on.
My wife keeps telling me you have to learn how to say no.
We used to put this just inside of the prayer shawls. Most of it, the prayers and everything, out of a loose piece of paper. And then when Mary Cox took over the prayer trees, she's an older 75-year-old woman, and everybody got there. And she's, well, she ended up organizing everything so wonderfully that she got myself, Terry Molinari, and with her input, we put together this little booklet instead of, so what it is it's got our mission statement, it's got what type of a shawl it is, it's got the care instructions right on the front, then it has some of our history, how the hand-knitted crocheted shawls are made by the Angels of Mercy Ministry, and that we say prayers for the people who will ultimately get these gifts. It's got the prayers that we used to include, then we added a prayer for children, child sick. And then in the back here, we included our prayer that we say at all of our meetings. We don't have meetings very often because we're all real busy and we all work pretty much full time. And so when we do have a meeting, usually quarterly or something like that, this is the prayer that we've been saying for the past 10 or 15 years that I know of. So it's multifaceted in ministry. We have the prayer shawls. We have the prayer tree.
What are the prayer shawls? Tell them
about shawls. These are knitted by angels, and they are praying for who they're going to go to. And then we have them blessed at the healing holy hour. Father Sebastian blesses them via Deacon Henry.
Well, we both, either one of us blesses them in the name of the church. We don't,
right.
I don't bless it. Father Sebastian doesn't bless it. The church blesses it.
Yes, they are blessed in the name of the church, right. And so then after that, we give them to sick people, bereaved people, anyone having emotional distress, physical distress, anyone who actually wants one, we give a shawl to.
That's a good point of clarification, because people sometimes freak out and they say, oh, can I bless my child? You know, of course, anybody can bless anybody, you know? I mean, that's a wonderful thing to do. Go bless everybody, you know? The difference between, you know, a blessing from a member of the clergy, a bishop, priest, or deacon, or a person's blessing, is that when you bless somebody, you're giving them your blessing. When I bless somebody, I'm not giving them my blessing. I'm authorized to bless them on behalf of the church. So the church is giving the blessing. So when Father Sebastian or I or whoever blesses, the bishop, whoever it is, blesses something, it's not them personally, it's the church giving the blessing. That's what the ordination is about. You act in the name of the church now. You don't act as yourself anymore.
No, that's right. Okay, so when we bless
on our... Which you should. You know, everybody should bless. I mean, okay. Somebody sneezes, you say, God bless you.
Linda, she knits her shawls, and it's something that you do at home, and it's a lot. Sometimes women...
or in the chapel.
Right, anywhere that you are. And even the men can do it. So then we have our funeral meals.
Do you have men knitting these days?
No.
No.
It's a good thing to do, actually. I mean, you know, you can do
that. I don't know about that.
Well...
I mean, for the women, great. I don't know. I want to start
knitting.
I've
done one crochet.
Oh, that's
okay. I know. You know, my daughter in high school, knitting all of a sudden took off like wildfire. Now she's not in high school anymore, but even the boys all started to knit. I guess you know.
The first knitters.
You know why they wanted to be with the girls.
I know why.
When I was in my entire life, I'll tell you a big dark secret of my life. In high school, I actually failed a course. You know what course I failed? Shorthand. And I took shorthand, not because I wanted to learn shorthand. I couldn't care less about shorthand. I was the only guy in the class. I was distracted the whole time. And I failed. I don't know if I failed. I don't know. What is it?
Diane,
you know shorthand, right?
I was good at it.
Okay, see, I couldn't care less about it. There were all girls in the class, only girls. And I said, this class, I don't like this class.
This has nothing to do with sharpening, but knitting. I have, someone gave me a book on the history of knitting.
Second and third.
They knitted there.
Oh, it's not to the
next.
Fishing, okay. So the apostles are probably knitters.
They made their own nets. It was a method of knitting. And then the Dutch was started knitting along during the voyages, and each ship had their own pattern.
Okay, interesting. The high school story is everybody started to knit. I mean, even the boys, the girls, everybody was knitting, but they stopped them because they freaked out with those needles. They were afraid that somebody was going to poke their eye out, and so they said, no more knitting at all by anybody, so knitting stopped.
My dad was knitting on the chainsaw.
Oh.
And the machine that pulled your knitting for your
third size.
Right.
He was the repair person for those machines.
Okay. So this was the automated process knitting again.
Well, they used to have the IBM cards, the computer punch cards, and then things advanced. Then he got it.
I know. Well, I look at someone like Lori, who's not here today. She has a reenactment. You know, she spent hours and hours and hours doing the tatting. You know what the tatting is? And then you go to the mall and you see the machine, and does the whole thing, the same thing in 10 seconds.
Oh, sometimes people come before the mass, and we go over things.
Linda, you're also involved with the bereavement ministry. Tell us about that.
It only lasts twice a year. And basically, he saw her in the last month. So he was gathering here. It's very comprehensive. And if you need more help, 10:15, you can have 10:15, like Sister Tina.
Right.
And it's just very comforting.
You don't do the meal after the funeral, right? That's not the
verb.
You do the meal. I'm not quite sure who's in charge of that.
This people organize the one on Wednesday.
Do you know what a big when someone close to you dies, the last thing you want to do is worry about things like a reception after the funeral, you know? One of the best, most Christ-like things that this parish does is you don't have to worry about that. You know, they handle everything. Everything.
Believe me, that's God's way, because I come from a big family, and when someone dies, then we start cooking. And the thought of cooking after my husband died is the last thing I want.
That's right.
And when I came down here to make our final arrangements, Jane says, oh, well, the angels will take care of the meal. And I'm like, what meal? And then she told me what was going on. It was like,
thank God.
Oh,
you know, thank you, Lord, for...
That was just godsend. It really was. Because when people from, Massachusetts and everybody descend on your house, it's like, And, you know, I've got to bring the leftovers home and bedrooms full.
So that's
really wonderful. It's so wonderful. And I met so many wonderful people that's how I got involved.
I expect you to stay this time.
Yeah, well, as I say, this group is unique in the sense that many of them are already plugged in to parish life, you know. Normally at the end of RCIA, people are not plugged into parish life. But this is a homey, different kind of, it's homey parish.
Yeah, we kind of started back in one week thing. At least I did, because I started working in the office before I even became a member of the church.
Yeah.
I didn't know about it anyway.
Provides food.
Again,
that is something about this class. When Father Wood talked about the catechism, that we should read the catechism.
Right.
Because I haven't used it for references, and I didn't understand half of what it was saying, but I picked it up, and I started reading it, and it was like, oh, well, everything that's said in this class is right there.
It's there.
And I understood it through it. It's amazing how refreshing it is to me.
It's a little bit, like you say, it's a little bit, I've had people, for example, tell me, when I can't sleep, I pull out that big, I gave them the green copy once in another parish. Then when I can't sleep, I just pull out that big green book you gave us and start reading that and I go right out.
It's better than that.
There's one caveat. There's people who say that the catechism should not be distributed in RCIA. And that's because it was never intended to be the runaway bestseller that it was. When the catechism was first published, the intention was that it was going to be for clergy and professional catechists who had a background in the code of canon law and who had a thorough understanding of the documents of the Second Vatican Council. And how many people have that? But, you know, but yet the catechism was just a runaway bestseller. So
easy to read.
So, a lot of what it says is assuming that you know canon law, and it's assuming that you know the documents of Vatican II. But it doesn't seem to be much of an obstacle for many people. If there's something you don't understand, you just kind of probably gloss over it, and move on to the next thing. That's all. Yeah.
What is exactly? I didn't realize there were so many different.
The 26.
But I didn't realize
there were so many. Yeah, well, the Vatican II was unique in the sense that it was the first council that, as they say, was a pastoral council. Every council before then responded to a crisis in the church. There was some heresy that was running wild, or there was, well, the Council of Trent. Before the First Vatican Council, which Council of Trent was 1540, whatever the heck it was. That was the Protestant Reformation happened, and so the church had to kind of regroup and deal with the Counter-Reformation, and of course, even with the Protestant Reformation, we brought a lot of that on ourselves. We were doing a lot of the kind of things we do now, raising money, things that maybe aren't necessarily the most, we thought a little bit more, maybe we wouldn't do. We were selling indulgences, selling graces, to get money to build the new Vatican. And so that was kind of tacky, and it cost us, just like now, I think the sex abuse crisis cost us, people have, in many ways, the church has lost its teaching authority. People are saying, you can't control yourself. Who are you to tell me what to do? It's a small percentage.
My Protestant friends
that every small. Yeah, but it's just like you say, it takes one bad apple to make the whole bushel look like it's the whole bushel look like it's rotten. And that's what it will recover from it, but it's going to take a while.
I went to those things Wednesday and Thursday. I was able to go, and he had it down to the exact thing, the exact date that Jesus was born and Mary was born. How did they know that?
We don't.
Bob asked the question. Could you repeat that? Anyway?
Yeah. No. As far as the with the exact date of Jesus, there are people have studied that extensively. Because it's Jesus, and probably I think most scholars would say it was probably sometime in March is what they agree on, and it was probably around 6 BC. It's a sound so
why is how do you say Gargoyle?
Yeah.
How is he saying the sun stuff?
What was he? I didn't hear that. I wasn't there for all of them, so I didn't hear everything. What did he say?
He was going back. He was giving the exact spot. He was there. The exact date.
Well, two things. One is for important people like Jesus, scholars will do their best to study all the historical documents look at what was said, what seemed to be going on, who was in charge, and try to pinpoint, you know, when, but forget about it, well, forget about what anybody says, you know, forget about December 25th or any of that. What was going on, can we try to pinpoint a date? And that's how they come up with those dates. That's one, that's the scholarly approach. The other approach is the small t tradition approach, which is how we come up with December 25th. The church does not teach that Jesus was born on December 25th. No, the church teaches that we celebrate the birth of Jesus on December 25th, okay? Same thing with the birth of Mary. September 8th is the small t tradition that how that was arrived at is lost in antiquity, really, because it's not a cap. You know what a difference I'm saying between a capital T tradition and a small t tradition? Look, my father was born in Poland. The church he was born in became part of Russia after the war. You know, the borders switched. They burned the church to the ground that had the records. He was unsure of his birthday. So we picked the day, November 11th, and that's when we celebrated his birthday because he had a birthday. He thought maybe he remembers his mother saying it was September 11th, you know. November 11th. And so, okay, you know, let's do the... It's the same thing with Mary. Okay, somehow, some way, somebody, small t tradition, said Mary was born on September 8th. That's the date.
He said she was 14 years old. How
did they know? 14 years old when she gave birth to Jesus, because that's typically when Jewish girls gave birth back then. You know, people didn't live to their 80s and 90s like they do today. People, 40 years old, you were an old man, an old woman. So people, as soon as they went through puberty and their body was ready to have babies, they had babies because life was tough. You know, and you had to start early because you had to have a lot of babies because most didn't survive.
So then what is the thing in the Bible then in the Old Testament saying so-and-so lived to be like 100 or 200?
Remember, Jews do funny things with numbers, right? Numbers are not the way we understand numbers very analytically in this age of ours. Numbers mean something. You know, minimum wage is whatever it is, $9.75 an hour. You know, to the penny, we're going to tell you. People didn't think to the penny like that back then. You know, numbers were more symbolic in many ways. And old age meant God was blessing you. So, you know, according to the Bible, Moses was 999 years old or some such thing. Okay, God bless him. He was 999 years old. You got to understand, again, remember what I said at the beginning of this class. When you read something like that in the Bible, the question that enters your mind is not, is it true, but what does it mean? What does it mean? Okay? That's the question you have to zoom in on the answer to. What does it all mean? And so that more what it means is that Moses was a righteous man until the end there, when he, not quite sure what he did wrong, but he couldn't see the promised land, right? But he was blessed by God, and that was a sign of being. Today, you know, I mean, people who live to be, we have our own Phyllis Dove, 106 years old. I mean, she's considered a blessed woman, you know, to being able to live to that ripe old age, having lived to that ripe old age, and still going, you know. So she was at church last night. she's deaf, you know, so she, thank you, Melody.
Thank you so much. I did want to mention, though, about our prayer tree. Our prayer tree is
that's important. Yeah,
it's about 30 angels, and you don't have to do anything at all except pray. And what happens is there's five team heads, and they call the five members in their group. So that's five heads with five in each group. So there's around 25, and we get prayer requests. We have, you know, do you want your name in the bulletin? Some people don't want their name in the bulletin because they're very confidential. But it's a really wonderful ministry, and we also try to participate in the Healing Holy Hour. That's something that Deacon and the angel that started, and then Deacon, we're very blessed that he's just taken it and grows with it, and it's evolved to different things, like the butterfly, which is our logo, butterfly. Actually, that's in the blue color there, the little logo, and butterfly is our angel mercy logo. Thank you. very much for...
Thank you. Thank you for the prayer shawls.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, so Diane, everybody remember that. You know, again, the church doesn't say Jesus was born on December 25th, because that would be stupid. We don't know when he was born. But we celebrate his birthday on December 25th. Just like he's, you know, traditionally we celebrate Mary's birthday on September 8th, you know. And tradition says Mary lived to be 73, I think. You know, and how does it, it's the same kind of idea that, you know, nowhere in the Bible does it say anything about Mary's parents. But in one of the books that never made it into the Gospel of James, it's not an inspired gospel, that says that her parents' name were Anna and Joachim. Okay, you know, does it mean that their names were Anna and Joachim? No, but they had to have names. I mean, they were her. She did have parents, and her parents had names. And in passing, somebody mentioned the names were Anna and Joachim. Okay, so we'll refer to Mary's parents as Anna and Joachim, whether they were of those names or not. You know, they're both saints. Yeah? And when you pray, God knows who you mean. You know, he's not going to say, I'm not listening to your prayer because his name wasn't Joachim. It was Josephus. No, of course not. You know that. So people, there's a human, you know, it's just look at the TV, Ancestry.com and all this sort of stuff. People are hungry for their roots. Where do we come from? And of course, why are we here and where are we going? Those are the three big questions that have intrigued us as human beings for as long as human beings have been around. Where do we come from? Why are we here? What's the purpose of all this? Where are we going? And so it's no different with the church. We have tons and tons, as you are starting to find out, tons and tons of these little traditions that are not required that you believe them. You don't have to believe that Mary's parents were named Joachim and Anna and Mary was born on September 8th or any of that. But you know, I mean, it's as good as anything else. One of the reasons that the Gospel of James never made it in, many reasons actually. One of the reasons that you bring up Mary is somehow it says her parents knew that there was something special about this girl from the very moment she was born. So they carried her everywhere, never allowing her feet to touch the ground. And at age, whatever the Jewish right age was, maybe, you know, 11 or something like that, they brought her to the temple and they gave her to the priest, and she spent her morning, noon, night, whole life in the temple until the angel Gabriel came to her and gave her the, you know, it's a bit much, right? It's a bit much. Her feet never touched the ground. Her parents carried her everywhere she went.
She learned to walk.
Gosh, maybe she didn't need to or something. You know, see, that's the thing. A lot of these books contain information that, you know, it could be true. You know, it probably has a grain of truth in it, but then they get a little bit crazy. The real reason the Gospel of James was never accepted into the Gospels is because of the way that Gospel ends. I really can't quote it, but somebody, is it James? Somebody at the end is having a vision, a discussion with Christ. And Jesus says something like, only men can be saved, not women. And someone said, well, what about the women? And Jesus says, I will turn them into men. You know, transgender folks better not find this gospel, otherwise they're going to run with it, right? But you see, again, if that, no, we're not putting that in our Bible, you see? It's not. Remember, there were a lot of gospels. When you think of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, there were a lot of gospels. People were writing gospels back then. And the difficult thing is it was perfectly acceptable for you to write a gospel and put someone else's name on it. For example, maybe I would write a gospel. But who's going to listen to the gospel according to Henry? Nobody, right? But I know that if, pick somebody, if the Apostle James were alive today, what I wrote down, that's what he would have said. I knew him. I know those are the words he would have used. Therefore, I'm going to assign the authorship to him, because that's what he would have said. So here we have a gospel attributed to the Apostle James that was probably written by who knows who, a disciple of James, a competitor of James. There are a lot of competing. There's a lot of false messiahs back then. There are a lot of things going on that, you know, how do you sort all this out? I like to tell people, look, we can't figure out exactly what happened in Vietnam, right, 70 years ago. We don't know who, we can't figure out with JFK, was there one gunman or three gunmen or, you know, and that wasn't like recent history, that was in our lifetime, and we can't figure that out. How are we ever going to figure out some of these things that happened 2,000 years ago? You know, it keeps scholars in business, keeps them employed at universities doing all these studies. That's good, you know. But that's, you got to take it for what it is. You got to understand it for what it is. What else about that mission? He said a lot of things. We're going to talk a little bit about this if we get to it today in this rapture class. Because he said, and this is, I thought of you right away. Well, you have a question? Or?
No.
Because I thought of you right away, Diane, because one of the things that the church teaches, and I'll bet very few people know this, is that one of the signs of the second coming of Jesus will be the conversion of Israel. Israel will become Christian before Jesus makes his second coming. And he mentioned that in passing. It's in the catechism. And probably, I don't know, nobody seemed to respond to it in either way. But, you know, we have reasons for why we say that. And you know, it's one of the things that you know, many, many things that you wonder what was. Go on, tell us more about that.
There is some kind of a group which I almost joined years ago, but I never did, and they're called Jews to Jesus.
Yes, that's a big group. That,
and I think I was in college then, and I was like, how can you be a Jew for Jesus? I mean, it didn't make sense.
Well, you know, Jesus was a Jew, of course, in the sense that he practiced a Jewish faith, and so did his mother and father, you know? So the early Christians didn't think of themselves as Christians. They thought of themselves as Jews. They said, this is what's next now. You know, this history of salvation, all this stuff. Okay, the Messiah came. And so now the next thing for us Jews is to be followers of Jesus. We're still Jews now. And that continued until 70 AD when the temple was destroyed, right? That Christians, the first Christians, would celebrate the Sabbath on Saturday, like any Jew does, at the temple, but there was a temple then, and then they would celebrate the resurrection on a Sunday. Right? But then in 70 AD, the Romans destroyed the temple. They burned the city of Jerusalem, decimated it. No more temple. You can't have temple sacrifice anymore. And so that's, you know, that had to stop. You know, and one of the things that, who are the Jews going to blame for the destruction of the temple? Is it going to be the Romans? No. The fault of it was those damn Christians. It was their fault. So, and Orthodox Jews to this day abide by this. They anathemized, they damned the Christians, and forbade to this very day. I mean, they don't enforce it really. I don't, well, probably some places do. But for this very day, Christians are forbidden in Orthodox synagogues. You are not welcome there. Because, you know, they don't want to get sued maybe anymore. I don't know. You know, this is the day of age of inclusiveness. Everybody's welcome everywhere. But if I would appreciate it if you would look into some. You going to be at the Seder tomorrow night? Oh, I wish you would come. No, you can't. I was hoping you would.
I would try to do too many other things.
Yeah.
Because
we're going to look carefully how Jesus celebrated the Last Supper as a Passover Seder and some of the things he did differently. We look at something kind of different every year, but it's always a Eucharist.
6 o'clock.
The dinner is at 6 o'clock. Potluck, 6 o'clock. And then, is that right? Is it 6 o'clock is the potluck dinner? Or 6:30 maybe? We always struggle with the time because 6 o'clock makes it hard for people who work to get there on a Monday night. 6:30, but then 7 o'clock is too late already for dinner. So I think we put it at 6:30. But anyway, No, so there was an anathema. You heard today in the if you went to Mass already, when Pilate. You know, there are some, I'm getting all over the place here. There are some Eastern churches, when we talk about the Eastern, those of you who have been attending this class on the Mass of the Book of Revelation and so forth, there are some Eastern churches that have Pontius Pilate as a saint. Saint Pontius Pilate. Because look at today's gospel. He greatly regretted what he had done, right? He made a mistake, but there's an indication that he repented of that mistake. If you look carefully at the words of that gospel, there's clear regret there. And what does he say? He says, I wash my hands of this innocent man's blood. And he washed his hands. And what did the Jewish people say to him? Let his blood be on our head. From a Jewish point of view, they cursed themselves. I don't want to start to make it sound like the Catholic Church is anti-Semitic. It's not. Again, Jesus was a Jew and our roots are Jewish and so forth. But there's some interesting history with all of that in Pontius Pilate and and including the hardness of heart. As St. Paul says, that certain Jews experienced a hardness of heart and did not convert. That would have been a consequence of that curse. But if we have time and get to it and you stay for this class coming up at 10 o'clock, what St. Paul says in Romans, St. Paul says that the hardness of heart of the Jews was all part of the divine plan, because the Jews didn't convert with Jesus. Not all the Jews, some Jews, many, many, many Jews became Christians, so to speak, right? Even though they still thought of themselves as Jews, they were the Christians, right? But many Jews rejected the Messiah. And as a result, the reason for that rejection is so that the gospel, there would be time to preach the gospel to the Gentiles, so the gospel could be preached to all four corners of the world. And what St. Paul says, I didn't read my Bible, but what St. Paul says is, if the Jewish rejection of the gospel meant the conversion of the Gentiles, imagine what it's going to mean when the Jews convert. It'll mean the resurrection of the dead. Okay? When does the resurrection of the dead occur? It's going to occur at the second coming. That's why the Catechism says one of the marks of the final coming of Jesus, his second coming, is going to be the conversion of the Jewish people, because of that line from Romans, St. Paul in Romans.
There's something else he said was going on, too, besides that.
Oh, yeah, Romans is a very complicated letter.
The Father Lewis.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Jews coming back to the church was something else, I can't remember. That was a good one.
And he didn't, I guess there's only, like anything, there's only so much you could say.
He's not happening, though.
Yeah, in the time you have, but there was so much he could have picked up on and followed on with that. I'm thinking to myself, well, I better make sure whoever comes to the 10 o'clock class, I'll have to make sure that we talk about some of these in a little more detail. Because some of it sounds outright crazy. Right? I mean, in a certain sense, that sounds outright crazy. That the Jews will convert before Jesus makes his final return. Come on. Yeah. The church is going to undergo a tremendous persecution before this coming of the, we don't believe in rapture, we'll go into all that, but we don't believe in rapture, but we do believe in an antichrist, and that antichrist, there's debate over whether we're talking about a single person or a government or a whatever, but the antichrist is going to be able to work wonders, perform miracles. He will demand that all people worship him as a deity. If you don't, tremendous persecution, and there's going to be a great apostasy. Huge numbers of people are going to leave the church. Yeah? We're getting ahead of ourselves here, because I know a lot of you guys don't stay for the class coming up after this. Huh? But that's going to be another... That's what Pope Benedict meant when he wrote that Ratzinger report, when he said the church is going to get smaller before it gets bigger. You know, at the end, it's over, right? But that's what he was referring to, that great tribulation that the church will face. The church is going to have to follow her Lord to Calvary, literally in that sense. She is going to have to go tremendous suffering herself before she could rise on Easter Sunday, which will be the second coming. So it's not like, you know, more and more people, they have this wonderful sign, Catholics come home, you know, more and more people are going to join the church. The church is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and people are going to give more and more and more money, and everything's going to be just peachy keen. That's not what the church teaches about the future of the church. There's going to be a great apostasy. And huge numbers of us are, just like all the disciples today fled when their faith was shaken. Jesus warned them, your faith is going to be tested tonight. And they all ran away, every last one of them. John came back. You know, they all kind of came back eventually, but, you know, John was at the foot of the cross. Where were the others? We know the others weren't at the foot.
Well, it's probably a good day to scatter them. They all been killed.
Well,
that would have been over.
You know, your point is that if they didn't scatter, they wouldn't be around to be the preachers of the, but there are probably others that, I mean, I don't know, that's a hard what if game to play, but there are probably others that could have carried on that message.
They also got martyred, sure. But...
They also got martyred, except for one of them. Who wasn't martyred?
John.
John. Thomas was martyred in India. Thomas Sebastian's Carol, where he's from.
He was a doubter.
Yeah, the three people that didn't suffer a martyr's death was the beloved disciple John, Mary the mother of Jesus, and Mary Magdalene. And those are the only three people we know that remained with Jesus at the foot of the cross until the end. All those who fled, many of them were crucified themselves. See? So, you know, some stayed, and Mary, tradition says again, Diane, that Mary died, John took her. John was the bishop of Ephesus in modern day Turkey, and he took her. Mary lived with him.
Joseph.
We don't know, you know, again, tradition says Joseph died, but we don't know. Joseph is mysterious. Joseph just kind of disappears in the Gospels, and nothing is ever said of Joseph. So exactly what happened to him, we don't know. Although he's not on the scene. Yeah. The fact he had to be dead, because otherwise Jesus would have been absolutely ludicrous. If Jesus had brothers or sisters or a father, he wouldn't give his mother to care for by the beloved disciple. She'd had a family. She had other children. She had a husband.
Did she have other children?
No. No, that's the biggest evidence of the fact that she didn't. It was because it would have been a slap in the face for Jesus to give custody of Mary to John if she had other children.
Because some of the places say...
Oh, yeah, children. I know.
Okay.
No, a definitive doctrine of the Catholic Church is that Mary did not... Because her relationship with her son was unique. It was if she had another child, I mean, a mother, if she has 10 children, has devotion to all those 10 children. Mary was the model, the first disciple, and the model of discipleship. Single-mindedness to Jesus, her only child. And so, you know, I mean, I know in the Bible it says things like, you know, Jesus was her firstborn or something like that, right? And so that, but that doesn't mean that they found tombs in Egypt for the Israelites that were in the tombs back then, that excavations that says on the ossuary she died giving birth to her firstborn son. So, you know, that right away puts to rest the possibility that that you have, you know, it means, you know, just because you call the firstborn, again, has a Jewish significance. The firstborn, the child who opens the womb, gets dedicated to God in a special way. So that's the significance of identifying somebody as firstborn. Well, I guess the 10 o'clock crowd is arriving here. So, we could continue our CIA after, you know, again, next week is our big week. So remember, Mass of the Lord's Supper. What time is it?
7 p.m.
You don't need a rehearsal for that, Diane. You're not going to have, those of you who are having your foot washed, you'll be directed at the time. Those will be an announcement made. Those having their foot washed, come forward. Jane has your names. Diane, you're not on that list. Don't worry. And so you just come forward and get your foot washed. It's just, so wear something appropriate. And then, that's your only part, if you're part of that, on Holy Thursday. But on Holy Saturday, rehearsal at 6 o'clock. We're going to have to practice because there's a lot of up and down and moving from the front of the church to the back of the church for the sacraments when you get baptized and so forth. So we have to do this reverently. And so to do that, we have to practice. And the problem I have is a whole year goes by since we've done this the last time, and I don't remember what we did. So I have the book there under my nose, and then we try to figure out what it is we're going to do. So I'll see you all on Thursday at the Mass of the Lord's Supper. If you can make it on Friday, too, at 3 o'clock, I'll see you then. And then for sure, the Night of Nights, Holy Saturday, 6 o'clock for practice.
Where is the Mass of the Lord's Supper?
In the church.
In the church, okay.
It's beautiful, absolutely. If you haven't been before, it is the whole Triduum, 3 days, absolutely beautiful. The best of the best of the best as far as liturgy goes. You're gonna can't wait for next year to come back, I guarantee it. Thank you.